Hello and welcome to another phase. I'm your host, Tamara Dreesen, and during this week's episode, we discuss some topics that do not come up in conversation every day. I am thrilled to be joined by Treecar. She is a death doula, dream guide, and diviner, which is another word for someone who practices divination. For those of you that haven't heard of divination before, you probably know what it is, but haven't heard that word. But divination is simply the art and practices of reading things like the tarot, tea leaves, palms, like runes, to receive messages and connect with energy. And yeah, Tree's journey and life experiences are, a lot of them to me seem very out of the ordinary, very fascinating, and I cannot wait for you to listen to some of the stories that she shares about her life experience, because in so many ways it's just so cool. I recently attended her Dreams and Crystals workshop online via She's Lost Control, and as you know, I'm pretty well experienced with crystals, which you can find out more about in my book, The Crystal Code. I use crystals to support me to sleep better, but I hadn't actually ever really, well, not that I can remember, connecting with them for dreams. Since recording the episode of Another Phase with Alexis Smart, which you might have heard in series one, Alexis suggests paying more attention to my dreams. And since then, I've been doing that. I've just been taking notes in the morning and recalling what I've dreamt about to just observe any patterns and symbolisms. And since doing that, my dreams have actually become a lot more vivid. So after Tree's workshop, I've been sleeping with crystals like under my pillow and like trying to sleep holding them. And it's interesting because a lot of the time, like, I do wake up still holding them. And what I've been doing is asking questions to see if they're answered through my dreams. It's been really interesting to see what comes through, and in a roundabout way, this practice has actually helped me find the title for my upcoming course finally, because coming up with titles and names is just like something that doesn't come easily to me. And yeah, I always end up having this list of like very cringy names, or I think that I've got the one and then it's already been used by someone else, but I'm not going to tell you about it yet. Like, it's still in the kind of cocoon phase, still working on it. But I'm 100% sure that it's going to be totally up your street if you're enjoying these conversations and the work that I do. Anyway, back to dreams. I love having dreams. I often don't want to wake up from them because I'm having such a good time. And it's interesting to see what clues and messages that I can receive through them. I've been reading Tree's book. It's her first book, Dreams, which I definitely recommend if you'd like to learn more about dream work and how to improve the quality of your sleep. Because much like in like last week's episode with Richie, where we're talking about breathing, breathing is like such a fundamental thing. And if we can kind of like hack the ways that we can like live our lives, like biohacking. Am I using it the right way? Anyway, using these things that we do every day that are fundamental to our life experiences, if we can improve them and get the basics right, everything else is so much easier, I think. And we all know what it's like when we haven't slept well, or we're stressed and we're waking up in the night, or our sleep quality is affected, and the knock-on effect that has on us and like our state of mind, our state of being. And yeah, sleep is so important, isn't it? Because like that's when we're recharging, our body is healing and regenerating. So yeah, there's lots of tips about that in Tree's book. But yeah, more importantly, it's just the kind of like what we're talking about here is dreams and other states of consciousness. During the conversation, Tree shares some incredible stories from like realizing her calling to experiences with plant medicine. And from the sounds of it, she's had some pretty mind-blowing experiences through ayahuasca ceremonies. And it's so interesting to hear how healing and transformative working with plant medicine has been for her. We also talk about some trippy things like astral projection and out-of-body experiences. It's making me think, what's that program on like Netflix that's been on? I think it came out like last year or earlier This year it's like behind her eyes. What do you think it's behind her eyes? I'm sure it's behind her eyes. And it's a bit cheesy. I thought it was a bit cheesy, but I thought it was really cool or interesting how they brought in astral projection. I mean, I don't know if watching that will make you want to do astral projection. It makes it seem quite scary, but I've heard really incredible things from people that have used astral projection in a really profound way. So yeah, I just went on a tangent then again. You know, that's what I do sometimes. But yeah, if you're like, what do I watch on Netflix? That might be one. Another thing that I've just finished watching actually is On Being a God, or On Becoming a God in Northern California. Or Central California. Oh my gosh, I'm terrible. Like these names, I can't think of these titles. But it's a new series with Kirsten Dunst. Like, yeah, check that out too. No astral projection, nothing trippy there. It's like based on, I think it's like based in the 80s from the looks of their costume design and scenery and all of that. But that's a really good one. They talk about, it's like about like a pyramid scheme. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. It's like a dark comedy. Anyway, back to this episode, back to the dreams, back to tree. I really hope that you enjoy listening to this one. Welcome, Tree, to another phase. I'm so excited to talk to you. How are you doing?
Yeah, great. I'm feeling the summer weather now. I'm loving it. I'm like, yes, finally.
Yeah, same here. I feel like it's been such a long winter and slog, hasn't it? And yeah, it's just like now that the sun's out, it just makes such a difference to everyone's mood, doesn't it?
Yeah, instant happiness. And yeah, it felt very long, hibernational period. I'm kind of like, come on, let's do it. Let's live.
It's a bit like being in like prison and like, you know, when you're doing the lines, how many, yes, like, how many weeks, how many months, it's like, how much longer till we're released? But yeah, I feel like it's that everyone's been feeling the same, haven't they?
Yeah, and funnily enough, I've got like a 1-year calendar on my wall with those X's.
Have you?
Yeah, I was just joking with my partner earlier, came in and I was putting another X and he was like, that looks like so prison. And I'm like, I know. It's like, it's the countdown.
yeah. And like, how, so for you, I'm sure it's like the same as so many people, like you've had to like take your business online.
Yeah.
From like doing things like in person. How's that been for you?
Well, it was to be, I was really quite like, oh no, concerned when the pandemic first happened, because everything I was doing obviously was in real life. And I had a whole year planned in 2020 of being over in the United States doing in real life retreats. So I had retreats lined up for like lucid dreaming retreats lined up in Hawaii and New Mexico and New York. It was like everything was all in some book tour thingies and stuff like that. And so when that happened, everything was canceled overnight pretty much. I was like, whoa, what am I gonna do? Like, what am I gonna do? This is like, you know, at first I had a slight freak out for like 24 hours. And then I just went, you know what, just gotta go with the flow.
Yeah.
And just see what happens. So, you know, in discussions with She's Lost Control, we ended up just taking some nice things online inventing things to help hold space for people. So that's where the moon circles arose out of the pandemic. And so that became a very consistent thing throughout the pandemic. It's still happening. So, and then from that, I started offering other modules like lucid dreaming classes and workshops and tarot master classes and various things. So it came about at the right time, but it had to open up the brain to some ingenuity and to some adaptability and some imagination and just join forces to bring about these things. It's been cool because it enabled us to carry on as practitioners and as She's Lost Control as a platform, as well as help people through these weird times, you know?
Yeah.
So it worked out.
Yeah, it's totally worked out. And I, like, same for me. Like, I, in a lot of ways, like, I prefer doing, like, seeing my clients and holding events online.
I feel like it opens it up to so many more people. And in some ways, when I'm doing a moon ceremony online, people are more relaxed when they're in their own home. Like, people seem to open up more when they're sharing and asking questions. Like, it's just a different energy.
It is totally different. And I think it, people, like you said, they don't have to travel somewhere. So they're not, they don't have all of that energy of traveling and the worry and the stress of doing that. They can just turn on their laptop and light their candle and just be like relaxed.
Yeah. Just get comfy, like pour a cup of tea and just chill out, and then like roll into bed afterwards.
Yeah. So it's been really good too. And like you said, there's people globally that can tune in. So this has been amazing to develop this online community of people from everywhere tuning into these sessions. And it's been great. So yeah. I've loved it.
I feel like it's definitely a bit like last year has just been like an awakening for like so many people. I had a journalist from Vice message me asking like, why do you think this is? Like, everyone's now with the pandemic, like last year, like really getting into spirituality and like buying crystals and like all the things. And then she's like, why do you think now is like the time that everyone's getting into it? And also all these healers are kind of like really stepping up to the mark in a way. And I was just like, well, I think that healers have kind of like been through that transformative time. I mean, everyone goes through transformative times, but I think there's a reason why healers and practitioners do the work that they do, so that in a time of crisis it's like we've got the tools. Like, we've kind of like, we've been through this, we've developed our trust muscle, and we've got these tools. And also part of what we do is of being of service, isn't it? It's making that work accessible to help other people.
Absolutely. And more than ever, because people had their lives were put on hold and their busy external lives stopped, it forced everyone to go inward. And a lot of that, it's very challenging for people sometimes too, because things in the internal realms that have been put on hold emotionally, spiritually, or psychologically pop up to the surface. So people can kind of have crisis in this time of hold and suspension, and therefore need the help of guides and practitioners or healers to walk alongside them. So there's been cases and also statistics behind this, that people who have had, you know, mental health issues, or they struggle with certain things, it's been expedited or exemplified during the pandemic. So it is a time of taking great care because of the effect of the stress of this COVID.
yeah. And for the healers as well, and practitioners, like remembering to look after themselves. Like, I feel like so many of my friends that are like yoga teachers and healers and tarot readers, like in the first round of sort of like lockdown, everyone kind of went to like service mode. But then like as it went on later, a lot of people were like, I'm just burnt out. Like,
100%.
Really burnt out and needing to kind of like have some TLC.
Absolutely. And I experienced that at the end of January.
Yes.
Where my body just freaked out because I had been just going hard for like, you know, 9 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like literally doing up to 8 tarot sessions a day sometimes. And plus I'm a death doula. So those services went through the roof during the time of pandemic because there's so much death. So I'm doing a lot of, you know, living on Zoom. And of course I'm the type of person, I can't say no, you know, I basically at the end of January, my body just went, you know what? Stop.
Yeah.
And it just freaked right out. And I had to take a rest for like the month of February, basically, and not, you know, not do any sessions for a whole month in order to get some rest. And it's funny because, you know, the spirit is willing and I'm like, no, I could do this, but the body just says, you know, stop.
Yeah.
If you don't, I'm going to make you.
Yeah. So. And it's taking heed, isn't it? Because we have all these little red flags and warning signs, and we're like, no, I'll be okay. Or like, I want to help this person. Because the lines get so blurred when you do what you love as well. Like you, it's hard.
Yeah.
It doesn't always feel like work. So then it's harder to switch off. Like if you're doing an office job or any kind of job that you weren't enjoying, it's so much easier to clock off at 5 o'clock, isn't it?
It completely is. But yeah, if your heart and your soul is into it, then it's those lines are, it's a challenge to be able to have those good boundaries. And also as a healer and a practitioner, to to seek the care and the self-love and the support that you need to care for yourself, because you're not much help or service to those who need it if you can't do it for yourself. So I've been trying to also just make sure that I have sessions with other healers and practitioners or doulas and able to have the reciprocal support. So that's really important too through the process.
Yeah. And I think it's like walking our talk, in a sense of like, why would we expect someone to see a healer if we're not looking after our own? It's like, oh yeah, come and see me for thing, like, because you need it, but like we should need it as well. It's not like, it's like, do as, what is it? Not, oh, I can't remember, is it do as I say, not as I do? Like, but actually, like, do, I don't know, I'm getting it so mixed up, but it's so important. Like I think people forget that. And I think so many people think like, oh yeah, I'm a healer now. Like, and you've got the tools, but you forget to use them yourself. And it's so different when you're doing it on yourself as to when you're in receiving mode. And
yes,
an energy healer or a doula or someone else is like working with you, or you're having a reading with someone and they're giving you a different perspective.
Yes, you need to take your own advice. The advice that you're giving others and the support and care you give others, don't forget to give it to yourself too.
Do you find that like when you do tarot readings, like where you're like, oh, I need this, I feel like this is a message for me as well. Do you get that?
I've had that from time to time. You know, like the Temperance card comes up and I'm like, oh yes. Nice little reminder there. I need to like not burn the candle at both ends here and make sure that I balance my mind, body, and spirit here. And definitely I'll get the little pokes and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, as you're like, I get it, like as I'm saying it, and then I'm like, oh, I need to do this
too. Absolutely. And then I'll get like tarot cards pop up in my dreams, and then I'll be okay, listen, okay, I got you here, you know. So it's like my dream will give me a tarot reading, and I wake up going, okay, thank you, I got that message. And that happens from time to time too.
That's
and sometimes I'll get the tarot card coming up for another person, for a like a friend, acquaintance, or a client. I've had that too.
In a dream.
I just had that a couple of days ago. I had a dream of a friend who lives in the United States, and I was talking to him, and then all of a sudden in the dream, a gigantic tarot card of the Hangman just came lowering itself behind him, like just really slow, like just coming behind him. And I just sat and, you know, this amazing image in the dream of him just chatting. He was unaware of the card coming behind him, just perfectly framed, you know, the Hangman right behind him. Of course he got in touch and said, hey, and he's like, I needed to hear that. So
wow. Did you get in touch with him, or did he just get in touch with you out of the blue?
No, I got in touch with him and said, hey, you were in my dreams last night with a massive tarot card. So here's the message.
Yeah.
So I've had that from time to time.
That's
just
cool.
Quite good. Yeah.
So like we've dropped a few hints as to like what you do, but like how would you describe all of the incredible things that you do?
Yeah, so I describe myself as an author and a guide working in the realms of dreams, death, and divination. Mm-hmm. So those are the three fields, the three Ds, the double D. And I've got the third one, which is psychedelics, but I guess you could say D as in drugs, but that has a lot of stigma, you know. So I could be like D.
Yeah.
D. Dreams, death, divination, and drugs, but drugs, too much stigma around that word, but entheogens and psychedelics, altered states of consciousness. But yeah, so that's how I would describe myself. So I write books in those areas, and then I also do sessions with people, either through one-to-one sessions. I'm a guide, so as a guide, that can be through a session or as in a class or a course as well. I refrain from using the word teacher because I think the word teacher conjures up a lot of like, let me school you, man.
Yeah.
Like, let me teach you something. And it's to me, it seems a bit like master servant, or there's this sort of submissive and dominant kind of exchange with it, or there's a I know better. Where it's, I feel that when I like the word guide, I like to like feel like I'm walking alongside a person because I learn just as much from them as they learn from me. So to me, it's a symbiosis, and it's there's equal footing there in many ways because I learn all the time.
Yeah.
And I like to feel like I'm still learning, you know, and then I haven't, you know, I'm not like yeah, I've got this degree or these accreditations, so therefore I'm somehow more an expert. So yeah. I see it more as a guide role, and that comes in so many forms. So walking alongside people in one-to-one sessions, courses and classes and workshops. And so all through that sort of spectrum. In books.
Yeah. I've got your dreams book here. I'm loving reading it. Because I think dreams has been quite prominent since childhood for you, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, I think it all started with dreams as a child, and specifically the more non-ordinary states of dreaming, like lucid dreaming and the out-of-body experience. So those were, big parts of my childhood. And some of the earliest memories I had or are of these experiences more than anything in real life. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been fascinated with consciousness as a child, growing up as a teenager. As a teenager, I got more into the exploration because I was having more unusual and exceptional experiences, like the out-of-body experiences and precognition. So precognitive dreams that seem to predicted an event, and then the event would happen in real life a little while later. So I started to become more fascinated in wanting to deeply explore these topics. So as a teenager, it was like in the 80s. So this is like ancient history, everyone. And this is like, and this is pre-internet. So as a young teenager, it was like, you go to the library. If you wanted to learn anything, that's where you would go. So I'd spend a lot of time in the library. It was always like a family ritual, like every weekend. It was like the library. So nice. I loved the library because it was a place of solitude and quiet. And I just was so hungry for knowledge and information. So I was right into there in the section of spirituality, the occult, psychology, and just from a young person and just been really drawn to those topics. And so I'm self-taught in terms of the occult practices. Anything esoteric is something that I just learned from studying. So taking out big, huge books out on the tarot and huge books like this big, amazing, great, just full of images and pictures on astrology as well. So self-taught on those from a young age. And was able to really accurately guess people's star signs and things to people's fear and be like, oh my God, you're a witch, weird. and even got into reading palms, looking at, just really interested in all of these, esoteric fields. And of course, dreaming is part of that too, because it has a long history of being connected to spirituality, the esoteric realms, the shamanic realms through various civilizations in history. We all had these exceptional experiences of dreaming. So I was very much into history too. So, connecting the dots and just going wait, people have had these experiences. So why? And then also interested in science as well, really interested in the why, biologically why, and where does consciousness come from? Is it in the brain? Is it something molecular? Can we quantify it? And interested in the nature of reality. What is it? What does it all mean? Very philosophical. So yeah, I've always had these things as a kid. Yeah. And it really helped shape me in my path. I was one of those kids too, that, when asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? I was really stressed out by that question. Mm-hmm. Like it was really I don't know. I felt the pressure of society of you need to kind of have a career, a job. And I just felt like I failed miserably in all those questionnaires, when they ask you, what do you want to, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I remember being 12 years old and doing one of those computer, fill in the dots or whatever. And then it got computer generated and told you what you were going to be when you grew up.
Yeah.
And my top three were, a religious leader, which I was like, what? Like a religious leader. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then another one was a clown. I'm not kidding. A clown, comedy, working in comedy. I'm like, how is that even how did you get that from just like filling in these, like coloring in these like circles? Like, how is comedy like a clown? Literally. Yeah. I was like, what? Again, this complex here. And then the third one was an interior decorator. And I was like, okay, well, maybe it should be an interior decorator. So anyway, I always was really stressed out because I was like, I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And I don't even know if I want to grow up.
Yeah.
So I just always felt open to like, I always like kind of shrugged that off. It's like, I'll figure it out, you know? And I'm just going to just follow my passions. I'm just going to, mm-hmm. I'm just going to move towards what feels like connected to, you know, my soul mm-hmm. purpose. So yeah, all these things sort of merged at a point in time where I officially stepped out as like a guide, I guess.
And when was, so because you worked in the music industry as well.
Yeah.
Where did that fit in? And then when did you decide, I don't think we decide to step into that role as a guide, but like, when did that happen for you where it kind of,
yeah, so for me, it happened later in life. So all through my 20s and 30s, I worked in the creative arts. So I worked in the music industry, playing in bands and as a musician. And I worked in the film industry as well in various roles, in front of the camera, behind the camera, directing, producing. And that was the creative world was my trajectory. And that was where I felt like everything was happening. Of course, in my personal life, I had my own dreaming practice and my own esoteric followings and interests, but it wasn't until I was the age of 40 where it all kind of came together in a big eureka moment. Mm-hmm. And it sort of blew up into this calling where I was really showing, like, you know, you need to step out to doing this kind of work. And that was the year when a lot of different things happened. Just a few years before that, I was having like massive, like kind of, I guess, dark nights of the soul experiences because I had a lot of people around me die and a lot of people around me die of suicide. And in that time, I stepped out into I got to seek some care and some healing through mm-hmm. this process. So at the time, I found a really amazing woman called Joan, who's like a psychic healer mm-hmm. and like a witch, really. And she really helped sort me out and actually helped kind of the ball rolling with a lot of my calling. I had some amazing sessions with her where like energetic sessions where a lot was released. She showed me how to work with energy and how to maintain and take care of myself with the sensitivities that I have. So she basically helped me through, you know, like a spiritual crisis mm-hmm. or almost like an energetic crisis where everything, I just felt like everything was coming to a head. It was overwhelming. And she gave me the tools to navigate it. And from that moving forward, there was just a lot of synchronistic things that happened in my life, including working with plant medicine, ayahuasca, having deep revelations with that and big callings for that, told to start sharing my dreams online. And I was going like, what? And having like this almost argument with like ayahuasca saying like, that's weird. Like I'm a private person. Like, why would I put my dreams on at this time? It was Facebook. Why would I do that? That's so weird and egoic or something. And she's like, no, trust me, do this. And she gave me this vision of how it was going to help so many people. And I was like, wow. So I listened and started to do that. Taking photos of my, you know, 30 plus years of dream journaling and sharing some of the more weird ones, you know, like lucid dreams and, you know, out of body experiences. And I was getting a lot of people getting in touch, asking if I could help them out with certain things. So I was, you know, having sessions with people, just like very impromptu, mm-hmm. like for free.
Yeah.
And answering a lot of people's questions, and got to the point so much so that, I decided to just step out and just make it official. Which led to me writing a book, and the rest is history. Yeah. And around the same time when I was 42, I had stuff with death that was accumulating too. And so my path of dreaming mm-hmm. came to a head and I stepped out. And then my path with death also came out at that same time, which led me into becoming a death doula. And now this came about through a whole long history of synchronistic events that started when I was a kid and moved forward. And when that year too, when things were going on, I stepped into that role. And basically I started having these uncanny experiences from a young age where I was always at the right place or the right time when someone's like died or been in very close to death, in an accident close to death. And I was there holding them and holding space for them, calling the ambulance, doing CPR. You know, I'm not a paramedic, but
yeah,
I felt like as though, you know, looking back, my role was to be there to hold space for that person.
Wow.
And so, yeah, literally like 3 to 4 times a year kind of thing, this kind of thing happening, not everyone dying, of course,
but I started to close to,
yeah, like people like under a bus wheel, like run over, other people like knocked off, bikes hit by cars, other people like collapsing in front of me with drug overdoses. And like, really, you know, it got to the point where it was like friends of mine were like, "Treat, weird. Every time we're out with you, someone is like falling at your feet." And I started feeling like, I know I'm a witch, but this is a bit too much. I don't want to be causing, like, I don't want to be like some kind of dark omen.
Yeah. You don't want to be associated. That's not that you want to be associated with the, like, supporting people in that space, not as the catalyst of trees here, like the Grim Reaper.
I'm the Grim Reaper. Like, I know, like, this, you get a complex. So I was getting a bit of a complex. And that year when everything kind of came to a head, I had a man die in my arms on Broadway Market. And it's so interesting now that She's Lost Control is on Broadway Market. There's just too many weird synchronistic things around that street. Like, it feels as though, what? Like, so many things, even like beyond that man dying in my arms that morning, which called me into my death doula purpose, because basically after that event, I was just like, said to my partner, this keeps happening. This is weird. I got to ask my dreams why, because this is just too much.
Yeah.
And basically my dreams that night showed me that this is a role that I was meant to step into. Like, duh, it's happening because we're trying to get your attention to do this work. Like, it's as simple as that. I was like, oh yeah, sure, of course. And so I woke up Googling, like, I didn't know the word for it. I was just writing in words like emotional support at death, and I found the death doulas. And when I went to the death doula page for the training that I took, I was just buzzing with like confirmation. Like, I was just like, yes. You know, that eureka moment, like, this is it. That's what I was meant to be when I grew up, you know? So like, there was, it was just a really huge moment. So I signed up, and the rest is history. And now when those occurrences happen where people fall at my feet or whatnot, I just go, oh yeah, here we go. I'm stepping into it. I don't feel like fear or superstition at all. I just feel like, okay, yeah, right place at the right time.
Yeah.
I guess, as usual, here I am helping this person out. It still hasn't stopped, you know, like even just like a month ago, I was walking down the beach here in Margate, and I heard this man going, "Help." And I looked, and this man had fallen in this hole between like concrete, like these big concrete slabs.
Yeah.
And he had broken his arm, and he was old, and he was like stuck down there. And I was like, down there, and you know, I had to stay with him for like nearly 5 hours before an ambulance came. Oh, it was crazy because of COVID, but you know, it's still it's still going on. So I just helped him. I was like holding his hand, getting him to look at the sky, the clouds, the blue sky, guiding him through breath work to breathe through the pain, you know. So it's just like,
and was he receptive to it when you were?
Yeah, like, he was receptive to it. And you know, I explained some things to him. Like, he's like, "I'm so confused right now," because he broke his arm, and he's like, you know, couldn't move it. It was like just dead weight. And he's like, "I'm so confused right now." He said, and I said, "Why?" He's like, "Is my left arm," he's like, "it's moving, right? I'm waving it around. And I was like, "No, it's completely just still."
Yeah.
He's like, "I'm so confused because I can feel myself waving my arm around and moving it and waving it around. And I'm waving it right now, like I'm waving it at you. And I said, well, that's probably what you're feeling is your etheric energy body, your astral body. And he was like, what's that? And I was like, explained it to him. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's no scientific proof. I mean, in ancient lineages, we know that this exists, that we are beings of energy. But I just thought that was super interesting, mm-hmm. that this person who experienced like trauma to that arm, the arm was completely dead weight, yeah. that he felt that he was still like he was cognitively moving his.
Yeah.
This is really unusual, but yeah, these experiences still happen.
Wow.
Even though I am a death doula, but that, at the age of 40, that's when I really stepped out as a witch, really. And it makes a lot of sense because as women move, get older and move into our, you know, cronehood, this is often the role that we step into, the wise woman role. And so the timing was actually quite perfect in many ways.
Yeah. Cause I guess like if you were younger, like, did you maybe, or obviously you needed to have all of these experiences that you've had through your life to get to that point to be ready to, you can't rush these things, can you?
Yeah. And I realized that too, like, so my whole life was being prepared for this moment in this year, the year of 40 years old as stepping out. And it was the same year too, I started, cause I've you know, versed in tarot and astrology and the esoteric arts as well, that I just started to, you know, post images of my cards on Instagram, just out of interest. And then the reading started, you know?
Yeah,
so it was like, just as it's, and the rest is history. So what I was shown by ayahuasca to like put these things up on social media, especially the dreams, was good advice, I guess. Yeah, because it really had me step into helping others.
Yeah, I think spirit's always right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even though we're like, are you sure?
I know. Like, so funny, arguing with ayahuasca is a funny thing.
I've never done ayahuasca before. Did you go away, like what was your experience with it?
So my experience is with a shaman, one that is like a regular to me. So working with the same one, but over here in the UK, of course, all under the radar, but he's not from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So he's from South America.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've had many journeys with ayahuasca, and ayahuasca has been my biggest teacher. And even though I've, you know, gone to, you know, have had my studies, my human studies, obviously, yeah. in the areas that I work with, and have had my, you know, accreditation of being a death doula and whatnot, my biggest teacher really is ayahuasca. So even having the human teachings, which is great, obviously, it's good to have the pragmatic, but she's been like absolutely really the true teacher in what she's shown me.
Really? And how many ceremonies have you done with ayahuasca?
So I've drank ayahuasca about 11 times. I've taken ayahuasca into my body.
Yeah.
So that would probably, so maybe that's like 6 ceremonies,
mm-hmm.
5 or 6. Usually like once a year, kind of.
Yeah. And are they is the experience quite different every time?
Yes. Very different. But, you know, it's very visionary and psychedelic, you know, obviously you get, but the themes and everything is very, very different. My first experience was very, very difficult and very harrowing, and really like, I felt like the husk of a human afterwards, really.
That's what puts me off.
Well, it wasn't necessary though, because
yeah.
the reason why it was so harrowing and difficult was because I experienced the disillusion of my ego. And ego death can be really painful. And it also blew apart the construct of what I thought reality was. Although I was very open to, you know, multiple realities and multiple dimensions, but I had expectations, or I had critical judgments on what I thought things were. So I thought it was quite open-minded, but I realized that actually I was quite reductionist in a lot of my thinking, even though I think I'm a really open person and open to lots of possibilities. That shattered that even more.
Wow.
Which is good, but it can leave you feeling slightly like off kilter. And I really feel that the integrative process post journeying with psychedelics is really important. And I think that that's not available to too many people. It's super important to integrate the process. So talking with others, allowing yourself to unpack the lessons, allow yourself to move into deeper understanding of the lessons, and working through doing dream work around it, doing talking points with another guide. You know, these things are really important. And so why I'm so passionate about stepping more into accreditation with working with altered states and psychedelics in a transpersonal psychology kind of way, because I want to help people who've been, you know, who go through the ego death or through some of these more challenging experiences and being able to integrate them properly so that they're, you know, that they get the right benefits from the situation. But it was good. I needed to have an ego death.
Yeah.
It was necessary for me to move forward, and I'm way happier person for it.
Yeah.
It's like, and so that, you know, that seems like really harrowing, but it's actually kind of funny too. Cause when I like relay that first experience with ayahuasca, I like always, tell it from a humorous point of view. Like I like to laugh at myself in a way. Maybe that's that clown thing coming in.
Yeah.
But it's good, you know, the trickster is good to have a sense of humor, but she really showed me like, yeah, the universe is all about that. You need to step into that and not take yourself so seriously. And you need to really, we need to dissolve this before you can help other people. Yeah. So that was important. And I've had other experiences that have been so deeply healing that it went into the deep unconscious realms where I didn't even know I had pain or wounding. And I was so visually shown it. Yeah. Like where it was so clear. And I was like, whoa, like I was taken back to prenatal events in my mother's womb, like stuff I wouldn't not know. I couldn't possibly know this stuff because I would have been a little fetus. So it's like, how would you know that? And everything, and I experienced my own birth, like the trauma of being born and everything. It was like, I was brought back to the moment really in real time. And I sensed so much from my mother and from the whole situation. Anyway, I was healed from it all. I was like sobbing and weeping and purging and healing a lot of stuff from that time, you know. And when I got in touch with my mother and explained my experience and the things that I was shown and told about her, she backed it up and said, yeah, you know, that's
amazing.
Yeah. So it goes deep. So it's like having 25 years of therapy in one night.
Yeah. It sounds like it.
It's a game changer. And when that got healed with this thing with my mom, like the whole prenatal events, almost instantly my relationships with women, like just improved. It wasn't like I ever had problems with women at all. Not at all. But all of a sudden women were just flocking to me for help, guidance. I mostly help women now.
Right. Yeah.
And it just like, it removed some kind of block or some kind of pain or wound and healed that. And now I'm like a mom to so many, to so many women and girls. Yeah. It's just amazing. So it had served its purpose at healing because it enabled me to help heal and support others. And it's mostly women. And it's really interesting too, because I never knew I had that wound. I would never, I could have gone through my whole life not even knowing that unless it got unpacked in that, in that particular ayahuasca journey. So yeah, I'm a real advocate of the power of plant consciousness and the zones it can take you. So fantastic. And those are just a few experiences, but yeah, I'm not going to go on.
Just a few, but very mind blowing.
But there's been some, like there's been some game changes where I'm just like, cool. And it's also it's like the plant medicine keeps working through you and with you as well, like dream, like lucid dreaming becomes more accessible, out of body states become more accessible, precognition is improved. Like there's so many things. I think it's because it opens you up to a deeper experience. And I also do think on a purely biological level, there's some neuroplasticity that is probably going on. And there is, you know, there is studies that do back that up, especially trials with psilocybin and PTSD and depression, that yes, we can rewire our thinking, our thoughts through the use of mindfulness and entheogens. But I think working with ayahuasca, I think it really just, it opens something up. The thing is, when you take a powerful hallucinogen, like psychedelic, like ayahuasca and any other ones really, is that neurologically what happens is it shuts down the default mode network in the brain. So therefore something people think when your brain's on drugs, this is your brain on drugs.
Yeah. like a fried egg.
Fried egg. It's like, I just fried my egg. There's only one left. So people think if you were to go into an MRI scanner, you would have like this crazy brain that's lighting up and going mental, right? Like frying and going like, it looks like the 4th of July or something in there. But in fact, the activity is like, no, it's shut down.
Wow.
So that's fascinating. So there's less. So it's like the brain is like a filter. Mm-hmm. And when the filter is turned off, we're able to access these higher states of consciousness, these insights or knowledge or epiphanies that we just would not have had if our brain was just going through, worrying through its normal,
autopilot mode. Yeah.
So I think what happens is when you take ayahuasca or other sort of psychedelics, that you are able to get into that zone where you are able to turn that off. And I just call it dropping into the zone. And I do this before every session with any of my clients, before a tarot session, before a death doula session, before a mediumship session, anything at all. I'll do a meditation where I drop in. I'm dropping in. Yeah. And just through it, you know what I do? You know, most people, they observe their breath. And I've certainly done Vipassana, and I've completely, this is great, these meditation practices. So starting off with that, but you know what I do is I transport myself back to one particular ayahuasca journey where I sat up through the entire session, because normally you're on your back rolling around going bleh, like, you know, puking, and you're just like, this one particular one, it was actually one of the last ones I did, where I was just sitting up through the whole session. So before I tune into, you know, get into a session with a person, I teleport myself back to that particular session in ayahuasca. And with my eyes closed, I evoke it. I evoke the feeling, the experience that I had, because she had me there sitting all night long and she was showing me things. She was showing me how to work with energy. She was showing me how to tune into other people in the circle. And my hands were doing these like mudras all night, like just moving, just like on their own doing stuff. And so I basically just go back to that moment and I go, okay, I'm here and I'm going to hold space for this person. And that's what I do now. And it's like, I'm able to tune into the person. So that's how I do it. It's just, no one's taught me how to do that. It just feels intuitively that's what I should do.
Yeah.
And then when I'm having a session with a person, the intuitive zone is really heightened and opened up. So that makes it easier to receive messages from ancestors, deceased ones, easier to hear names and places and have visions and get everything right that the person needs. So
dropping into the zone is so important. Like I do that before like my sessions, and even I've been running this tarot vision Instagram journey over the, like, I've just started and it'll be over the month, and I've created this activation for it, and that's like to drop in the zone, because like we need to get in the zone to open up and shift our brain gear into this intuitive mode to then do what we need to do, because it's a completely different part of our brain, isn't it? It's a different level of consciousness.
Absolutely. That's so cool you're doing that. And it totally is. It's like, it's shutting off the brain. It's like, it is like turning off the filter, very much like the psychedelic experience. Mm. And you get the same thing in other sorts of altered states of consciousness. Breath work can do it. Mm-hmm. Meditation, trance-like states, the liminal states of hypnagogic on the threshold of sleep. Mm-hmm. Amazing zone to have that and receive insight or do remote viewing or get precognitive hits. And so it's very much like that, the dropping into the zone. It's like, and I guess the Buddhists call it the taming or of the monkey mind, and like removing the chatter.
Yeah.
You know, we're not taught this, right? We're
not
taught,
obviously.
We're taught to just like, to kind of like, connect to the chatter and to like wire into the chatter and be part of the chatter, in order for us to be good workers and, you know, show up at work and do your job and chatter. No wonder everyone's anxious and depressed.
Mm.
You know, so these flow states or the dropping in is really important. And it'd be really awesome to actually like do a drop-in session with you and a bunch of other practitioners all at the same time.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine? That would be amazing. Let's organize it.
I'm just like
It is amazing. And also, like you were saying, like invoking that energy. I haven't done it for a while, but when I used to teach, like I used to do like moon ceremonies, and it would be a different crystal for each like moon, and everybody would have a piece of that crystal, and then they would I'd take them through this experience with it and really connect with the energy. So I think in a similar way that you work with plants, but like with crystals, but I know you work with crystals as well. But then like once they've got that feeling, it's like, know that feeling. It's like you can invoke that feeling anytime. Like you, now you've had that feeling, you don't need the crystal. Like you know what that feeling is. Like you don't need, you can evoke that experience and that energy of that ayahuasca ceremony without having to ingest ayahuasca. We forget how powerful we are at calling that energy in.
Absolutely. And yeah, crystals are like an external tool, like an extension. They're like little guides, you know. They're amazing, right? And that's, so you can draw the same parallels absolutely with working with plants, because they're little guides too. They're they're little green guides, you know. Crystals are the little sparkly guides, and and yes, if you know, they're like training wheels. You can use them for a while and then eventually like go, oh wow, I got this, you know. I can just drop into that zone too. I can invoke it. And that's really cool to hear with your crystal work, that you're guiding people to be able to take it to that level, because we are amazing beings in many ways.
Yeah. And like, I was just thinking of, do you know Alexis Smart? She does the most like incredible flower remedies. She's like based in America, but
in
the US, but she, I was listening to her on a podcast, and she was saying what you can do is like, if you need a remedy, but you haven't got it, you can write down the name of it and like put it next to some water and then drink the water, and then it's like a short-term replacement, so that you can get the energy of the remedy without having it, but just by writing its name. And again, in effect, evoking it.
Oh, wow. That's very similar to like those studies around water, you know, when they were with intention sending love to some water, and then another glass of water they were sending hate towards it, and then molecularly it looked like different. The power of intention, you know, this is like the driver, the driver towards anything that you want to bring through. It makes me go back to the origins of the universe, you know, 6.8 billion years ago, where there was a spark of light that appeared out of the black void, out of nothing, out of black matter, nothing at all. And this little spark just ended up becoming the universe and everything, life on earth, you, me, everything as that we know it. And that was just a little intention. Like, it was just, there we go. And everything else is possible. So I always like to go back to the origins of the universe to look at, what can we possibly achieve in life? Well, if the universe can come out of absolute nothing, anything's possible. And modern day science supports the Big Bang theory. You know, modern day science goes, yes, this happened. This, you know, this is, we support this model in our model of science. Yet science will say, no, it's not possible that, you know, you can leave your body. It's not possible that there is an etheric body. It's not possible that you can, your consciousness can survive the biological death of your body. But I always go back to that, you know, the Big Bang and go, well, if you support the Big Bang and anything's possible there, then surely multiple dimensions are possible. Alien life is possible. Yeah. Consciousness after, you know,
yeah, like people, to me, aren't just, like, people aren't just imagining these things and making it up. Like with aliens, like, although I was saying, like, when I was talking to my boyfriend about this yesterday, he was like, why after all this time are, like, when people are still spotting aliens or like UFOs, that it's always on a really terribly, like, terrible quality image? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's never like an HD like thing. It's always like a bat. He's like, why?
Well, all you have to do is smoke some DMT for that, and you'll see me. Really? You'll see, okay, the HD.
You'll see them. Yeah, you won't need a camera for that.
No, you'll be in their world going, whoa, and they'll be like, why are you here? You'll be like, oh, sorry.
There's like this video, there's an Instagram account called Saint Hoax, and they're just like, they're just funny. And there's one where it's like Lady Gaga, like, meeting one of her fans, and they're like, oh, thank you. And it was like, how we'll be when the aliens come to take us away, because we're like, yes, just get us out of here. Lady Gaga, this person's just like, oh my god. So yeah,
that's hilarious.
So interesting. But it's interesting what you're saying about like kind of psychedelics and things, because in one of my previous episodes, like, I was like talking to Francesca and kind of like mentioned in passing how my boyfriend did a mushroom trip earlier on this year, and it basically, he had had a high dependency of like smoking weed, and it was like smoking really regularly. He did this mushroom trip, like just went out on his own and just went for a nice walk and did that, and hasn't smoked since. Like, or he tried, but he said it just felt weird. And then he was like, it was as if the mushrooms were like telling him not to do it anymore. So for all of the times that he's tried, and it's not really, he's not really been able to kind of like really stop. Like, this has been, what, we're in June now of recording this, and that was January, and it's just like amazing. And like, he's just so much more confident now. Like, he's had to go through a whole process, and it is like, a lot of people are, oh, like we said, like drugs, like frying your brain and all of that, but used with and I think he went in with this intention for support, you know, and for help. And I think like the power of the intention and calling on that plant medicine, like what that can do.
It's incredible. I mean, and there are studies and trials being shown on the great effects of different psychedelics to helping with addiction. There's lots of very successful trials around ketamine, as well as ayahuasca, and just changing one's mind and associations, like breaking that kind of neural connection towards wanting to go back it over,
like,
and over.
Default, it's just changing default. That,
yeah,
pathways, isn't it?
It's just changing it, and it's so amazing. I had a similar thing in ayahuasca. I've never considered myself like addicted to anything at all. Like, I used to drink alcohol socially, and I had one ayahuasca journey where she, and I didn't go in with an intention like I have a problem with alcohol. Like, to me, it's just like, no, like, there's nothing with alcohol that I feel like I have a problem with, but yeah. She showed me in one journey that how I had emotionally connected to alcohol and how I was using alcohol. She showed me all these different scenarios, and you were self-soothing with alcohol then, and it started when you were this age and over this experience. And like, she broke it down for me, this whole connection with alcohol on a subconscious level that I didn't even know was there, because I'm certainly not a certain person who's like, come home and I'm like, I need alcohol. Yeah. Like, I don't even really have it. You never really had it at home even, but it was just super interesting. And I did all this purging around it. Like, when you purge in ayahuasca, like, you're vomiting, but it's not really like proper vomit really, but it's when you're in the experience, you can really feel like there's an energy leaving you, or there's like, it's like you're purging like this old way of thinking or this thing that you're holding on to.
Like, literally.
So literally, like, on a metaphysical level. Like, and I saw like these, the stuff coming out of me, like in a hallucinogenic way, or what it really looked like these globules of really specific looking. And of course, the next morning when I looked into the bucket, it was like, there was no such little kind of globule kind of forms that were there. It was just brown spew, you know? Yeah. I was like, that's interesting too. But since that journey, which was many, many years ago now, I haven't touched a glass. Like, I've not been into drinking.
Yeah.
I've not had the taste for it. And it's not because that was just a byproduct of the whole experience. Mm. And I'm just not interested. I've just lost a desire for it. I don't even want to have the taste of it. It's so interesting. And I went in there without even having the intention of doing that.
Yeah.
But to me, it makes sense, because given my practice as well, I can see, if I think about it, I can see how alcohol wouldn't suit what I'm doing, you know, because it numbs you. It makes you out of it. You're not very present. You're a bit like low energy the next day. So to me, it's like, thanks, ayahuasca. You did me a favor, because I might not have put the connections together. So it's pretty fantastic.
I guess that also, like, drinking alcohol is just so normalized. So we don't see, because if you're like, well, I'm not an alcoholic, so I'm okay with, like, I'm not drinking every night, or we don't really have, like, but there can still be something around it. But because it's so normalized, we just don't see it.
Yeah, that's right. You just don't see it. But in this experience, I was really shown.
Yeah.
On an unconscious level, what I was doing. And it's cool too, because there's no judgment there. It's not like when ayahuasca, this plant consciousness, shows you this stuff. It's not like she's like, yeah, you should be doing, you know, you know, it's not like moralistic, or there's
not, you're like your inner critic. Like,
yeah, it's not like there's any moral angle at all. It's just deeply healing and pragmatic in a way. So it's like the plant wants you to be the best version of yourself. It's just loving, really. Yeah. It's just loving.
Amazing. And for anybody that is listening to this that might be curious about, I'm not saying trying ayahuasca is not the right way to put it. Like, you don't just try ayahuasca. Like, a sample of this. Like, but for anybody that's like curious about journeying with ayahuasca and going into ceremony with it, but what tips would you kind of like share with people to kind of help them do it in the kind of, I guess, like the most safest, most supported and most integrated way?
Yeah. So yeah, definitely. It's not like a trying thing. Have a little sample. Yeah. It's not like that. And certainly not entertainment. It's certainly not entertaining. And the shamans call it work. It literally is hard work. And it's literally the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And every time I go to sit in circle, I'm really scared. Like, I'm really nervous. Like, what is she going to show me? What is going to get unlocked? You know,
yeah, your ego must be freaking out. It's like, I'm comfortable here. I'm really happy how things are.
Yeah. And you feel like, you know, all the things will be popping into your mind. Like, I'm losing my mind. I've gone crazy. This is torture, psychological. I'm in the funny house now. I'm in the funny farm. Like, I'm never coming back. This is hell. And the more you fight it, the more it's just like a nightmare, right? If you're in a nightmare, and the more you're resisting the nightmare, or sleep paralysis like that, it exemplifies. So a really good tools to have going in, if you feel called, and often people will feel called. That's one. Yeah. That's the first thing. You'll feel like drawn to it. Also, it said, like, the shamans also say that the ayahuasca finds you first. So she'll come into your life. Like, so synchronicities will start arising, possibly. Like, it'll just be like on your radar, right? And you just feel called and drawn. So things that'll initially happen. And then ways to prepare. If you have a meditation practice, that's so helpful. So helpful, because with meditation, you're able to approach the experience through mind of equanimity. So you're able to just observe. You don't attach your feelings to it. You don't get carried away in thoughts going, oh my God, oh, I'm freaking out. Like, you know, you're able to keep it really observant, and no matter how difficult it is, and no matter what you see or how nightmarish or scary or freaky it gets, you're able to say, I'm just going to receive, I'm surrendering to this, I'm observing to it. So it helps a lot if you have a meditation practice. A good one is Vipassana, which is really good because it's just a very scientific kind of practice where you're observing your breath, and there's retreats you can go on for like 10 days mm-hmm. to learn the practice here in the UK, which is really helpful. And so I'd say that is really good as a starting point. You don't need to have had a psychedelic experience before you do ayahuasca. In fact, sometimes it might be good that you haven't, because then you don't have any expectations, or you're not holding any kind of criticism towards the experience. Mm-hmm. It's also helpful to do dream work too. If you are a dreamer or if you're not, you can start just recording your dreams mm-hmm. and allowing yourself to connect to that, because that's a very similar language to psychedelic experiences, because you're going into the realms of the unconscious. So that can also be a very helpful precursor. It's also very helpful to have, your physical body in a good way mm-hmm. before you go, because it's quite a lot going on physically.
Yeah.
Your heart can race, you could be sweating. Your breath could be like shallow. Mm-hmm. So you should be in a good state of health. So if you have heart issues, and if you have, or if you're on medication, like these things will be very, in fact, the shaman probably wouldn't let you do the ceremony mm-hmm. if you have these conditions, because it could take a lot on your body. But cleansing the body, there's a whole dieta, like a diet before and some instruction on that. But I think even just before that week of dieta, engaging in meditation and dream work, reflective practices can be very helpful.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's like interesting. Like when I listen to you talk about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds so cool. Like I would love in a lot of ways to do that, but then I just don't feel the call.
Yeah. And like, you know what? Not all of us feel the call.
Yeah.
And I'm that's like,
why
okay.
haven't I got the call? I want the call.
And you know what? Like,
I wouldn't force it if I didn't have the call.
Don't force it.
Yeah.
And I always tell this to people, because ayahuasca is kind of like on trend. Like it's, and you know what? Don't even feel the pressure. Please don't feel the pressure, because this is something that you might feel called to. And there's this terrible thing that kind of happens too in the circles of wellness or the psychedelic circles, where people start getting like almost machismo or a macho-ness around it. Like, yeah, I've done ayahuasca like 20 times, and like ego,
this.
And that puts pressure, like a competition. And that's terrible, because it makes people feel pressure to step up, or mm-hmm. they feel like I have to have that notch on my belt too, mm-hmm. that I've done ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. And that's really, that it shouldn't be that way. Mm. So don't succumb to any peer pressure. Don't succumb to any feelings of competitiveness or attaching your ego towards having it as a notch on the belt. Mm. It's not about that. Everyone's called to different things. Some people might feel called to their healing path through breath work or yoga.
Yeah. You can have those same realizations through different processes.
Totally. And that's exactly it. Mm. It's just an external tool. We all get there through different processes. And certainly we all have our journey. Mm. So not one is better than the other. Certainly not.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember having a conversation with someone who just got come back from their first ayahuasca retreat, and they were like talking about it. And I was talking about something else, and they were like, oh, it sounds like you've done an ayahuasca retreat.
Yeah.
Like those realizations, but not without doing it. There are so many other ways. Like it isn't like a FOMO of like, oh, well, if I don't do ayahuasca, I won't have those realizations or that transformation or that healing. There are so many other ways to go around.
Totally. In fact, one of my dear friends and colleagues, Jennifer Clariscora, who's a dreaming guide in New York, she's never done ayahuasca, but she is so wise, and she gets everything through dreams and everything through out of body states. And she's a deeply wise woman, and she doesn't need to do maybe she's done the plant medicine in previous lives.
Yeah.
You know, she is of Peruvian descent. So maybe, that's
fine. Yeah.
But she just doesn't,
in her DNA.
Yeah. She just doesn't need to, she doesn't feel the calling. She doesn't even feel a calling to any kind of psychoactive anything.
Mm.
She just, her dreams and her visions are enough. So wow. Yeah, so everyone gets there in different ways.
Yeah. And talking of dreams, like, what, for anybody that hasn't heard of like lucid dreaming before or out of body experiences, or they have but they're like, but I still don't know what that means, like, how would you describe them? Because you're like,
this is, yeah, it's good to describe them because these experiences are a lot like an orgasm, for example.
Yeah.
you know it when you had one.
Yeah.
But it's
I remember that when I was younger, it's like, what's an orgasm? It's like, you'll know it when you have one. It's just like, what? And then you have one and you're like, okay, I get
you're
it.
Like, whoa. Yeah. And it's also sort of challenging to articulate because the orgasm is like an experience of consciousness, an experience of energy. It's a biological kind of transformation as well. And so, you know, to try to describe it is difficult.
Yeah.
So sometimes lucid dreaming and astral projection, out of body experiences are also quite challenging to describe because they involve the peaked awareness of consciousness itself and being very present and aware.
Mm-hmm.
So until you know what that feels like, you might not know what a lucid dream or an astral projection feels like. Now that's getting into the hard problem of consciousness, which is a whole other, you know, area of discussion.
Yeah.
and it's so complex, but the moments we have in our life where we feel very present and aware, and usually this happens when we're having an amazing experience, like it could be watching a sunset and we're like, oh my God, wow, look at that cloud. And we're really with the moment.
Yeah.
You could have it when you're looking into the eyes of your lover and you're saying, I love you. And you're really feeling love in that very precise moment. So it's the moment of being really in the now and really alive and vivid. So we have that many times in our waking life. Some of us don't really have a lot of that though, because we're constantly in like, just in a thinking mode. And we're not present. We're just like, just doing little tasks. And
yeah.
A lot of people live their whole life just kind of sleepwalking that way.
Mm.
And they don't go, oh my God, I'm so alive right now. So the more moments you have like that in your waking time where you're alive, you're lucid, you're alive, you're present. Well, a lucid dream is when you have moments like that in the dream itself.
Mm-hmm.
So you're having a seemingly normal dream. And you're watching a scene unfold and it could be like, there's a giraffe walking across the road and all of a sudden the giraffe comes up to you and starts talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so unusual and weird and non-ordinary that you become aware that you're in a dream. So you have this like little epiphany. I'm in a dream right now. And you're so present. And then all of a sudden you're really present in the dream. Like, I'm experiencing a talking giraffe.
Wow. Yeah.
And then you start having a conversation. You're like, well, this is so crazy. I'm talking to a giraffe right now.
Yeah.
This giraffe's giving you like this amazing advice or something.
Yeah.
And so that's a lucid dream,
mm-hmm.
where you have peaked in conscious awareness within the dream itself. You understand that you're dreaming. You are able to make decisions within the dream. You're like, mm-hmm. I'm going to talk to the giraffe. and you're cognitively taking in what the giraffe's telling you.
Mm.
And then you decide, hey, giraffe, let's go fly somewhere. And the giraffe's like, yeah, and gets wings and you both fly. So your intention takes you somewhere else. So you decide to do things. I mean, a lot can happen within the scope of lucid dreams. Now, some people think that lucid dream is all about dream control, but I don't like to see it so much like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see it as it's not something that you can control, but something that you can co-create within the space. So a lot of people get it sort of in their heads that I can control this dream. I can make people do what I want. I can have sex with them,
mm-hmm.
or I can go like fly, like do extreme sports or something, or, you know, like they see it as entertainment. Like, I mean, like a video game, like I'm going to control everything to self-gratify. But I think there's so much more than that. And a lot of lucid dreamers will use it for control purposes, but it does come a time where the dream stops letting you control it.
Really?
Which, yeah. It's really interesting because I see the dream as being conscious itself.
Yeah.
So the dream is there.
Wow.
The dream is consciousness itself. Mm-hmm. And you can work with the dream. So trying to control the dream will eventually come to standstill. And I've had a lot of lucid dreamers come to me and go, Tree, can you help me? I've hit a dry spell. I can't seem to lucid dream. When I start to try to control it, the dream shuts down. And I'm like, because the dream wants to show you something,
yeah.
and you need to move beyond and stop, like, relinquish control.
Yeah.
So something cool can happen when you have a lucid dream where you just simply ask the dream, please show me something. And then the dream will show you something. And so often it can be like absolutely mind-blowing and mm-hmm. helpful in some kind of way. So co-creating with the dream. So there's so much potential with consciousness within that sphere. Yeah. So that's a lucid dream. Out-of-body experiences are very different. They are experiences of consciousness, but they are different in the sense that you're not in a dream mm-hmm. realm. You are literally in your room, your bedroom, and you have a very tangible experience of a disconnect of your consciousness from your sleeping body. Mm-hmm. So there's a very tangible, like, yes, I have just left my body. My awareness is now up in the corner of the ceiling. And often a hallmark of that is looking back at the bed, seeing the sleeping body, your yeah. sleeping body. And then you're in what is termed or coined as the astral plane, mm-hmm. which is very much like our concrete reality, except it's almost like an in-between place. Mm-hmm. And the astral plane has a very distinct color and look to it. So when you're out of body and you're conscious and aware, as we are, as conscious and aware as we are right now in this conversation,
yeah,
you're able to traverse that space and do things. You float, fly, you can go through windows, go float through walls. You can meet and see entities, and they yeah. can come in lots of different shapes and forms. They can come in like the forms of shadows. I've seen some that are like really small kind of entities that are like glob shaped and dark, yeah. like shadows.
Yeah.
Some of them are like orbs. Some of them feel like other people, like ghosts or apparitions. Mm. There's a long list of various wow. things that types of entities that you can come across mm-hmm. in the astral plane. So that's very unique to that experience. And also what else is unique to that experience too is that you're only allowed out for a certain amount of time. It seems like you will eventually get snapped back into your body. Wow. And also a cool thing about the astral plane too is that there seems to be you're able to teleport through intention. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I'll create portals and make intention to go to New York City to visit my friend or go to Chicago to visit another friend.
Yeah.
And there's a really tangible shift of location that can yeah. occur, and also a shift of timelines. So I know it sounds mad I'm saying this, but time travel.
Yeah.
Time travel wow. too.
Future and past.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I know. So that's kind of, I mean, there's so many other hallmarks yeah. Of an astral projection or loose or out of body experience. Mm-hmm. But those are just a few that are there. But so why do we lucid dream and why do we astral project?
Yeah, I was gonna say, what are the benefits? Why would people
this happen? Why has it yeah. been happening for thousands of years? One's proven by science. Lucid dreaming is proven by science. So that's backed up by science in a sleep lab in the late 70s by Dr. Keith Hearn. So science goes, yeah, okay, thumbs up, even though humans have been, you know, having these experiences for thousands of years. And there's yeah. also documented texts of ancient Vedic texts and that indicate that. But then astral projection or the out-of-body experience, those are two interchangeable terms. One has a science connection, out-of-body experience, and one has an esoteric connection, astral projection, where that is a practice that's induced through will. Now, that's not backed by science at the moment. It's considered a pseudoscience because there's not enough information and there's not enough tangible trials that have been able to concretely prove it. Mm-hmm. So that the jury's still out on that. But having said that, people still experience this. So why do we have these experiences? So of exceptional experience of consciousness. And where do we go? In a lucid dream, are we actually going somewhere? Mm-hmm. The dream characters we talk to, are they actually other people? Are they guides? Are they someone from another dimension? Are mm-hmm. they someone from another planet or a timeline? Like, it makes you think in a cosmological framework, like where does that sit within the reality of nature? Nature of reality, or is it just fabrications of my own mind? Is my mind that awesome? Yeah, that could, yeah. could make this happen.
Yeah.
And how am I receiving such awesome insight and knowledge that I wouldn't have been able to receive otherwise? Mm. And then in astral projection, why is that happening? Why do we leave our bodies? What is, why do we stumble across these entities and why do we go there? Mm. So I think that this is just the fun nature of consciousness itself.
Yeah.
And ability
that we're not making the most of.
That we're not making the most of it, that it's like it's a whole realm to explore, to expand our consciousness, to perhaps, like, the more we expand our consciousness, the future humans thousands of years from now will be able to just do this all the time, just on a, like, by command, just go, I'm going to shift realities. Well, you see kids on TikTok doing that now, trying to reality shift.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's like the latest trend. I'm so fascinated by, like, all these little kids are like reality shifting. And I'm like, dudes, you're doing, like, basically.
What does that mean? What are they doing?
So reality shifting is a TikTok trend, and it's like kids who are doing this. And it's basically dropping into this zone where, like, through active imagination, intent is also like a form of meditation, where they have an intention, like, I want to go to a crystal city and fly around with unicorns. I'm just making that up.
Yeah.
And they're able to put that intention in and go into their consciousness, go into this full-blown experience where they're in a crystal city flying around with unicorns. And it's like I see it as a form of biological virtual reality.
Yeah.
It's because they're creating these worlds. They're not saying I'm going to reality shift it. Like, they're reality shifting into, like, their own desire.
Yeah.
Whatever they desire. So that's like almost like a form of virtual reality where you're like, I don't really want this reality, so I'm going to shift into another one. So it's like the kids are doing this without a VR headset. And I'm just, like, fascinated. It's also like kind of like a form of sort of like remote viewing, like being able to do that. But it's also a form of intention making, like, and world creating. So the kids are doing this. And I'm thinking,
do you think,
like,
it's easier for them because they're kids? Because they haven't got, like, it's back to that classic thing. Is it classic, the right way to say it? But, like, with when you're younger and you're more intuitive, but people are like, no, you're making that up, or, like, that's, you know, like, your imagination, I've seen that, and you're like, no, like, that doesn't make sense, or that doesn't happen. But so is that because they haven't had that programming to think a different way that they can access that?
I have a few theories behind it. Mm-hmm. And my theories involve the fact that reality is really shit right now for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the kids today live in, like, a world where there's not, I mean, there's not a lot to look forward to for some kids. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big motivation to want to escape your own reality. And if you can't afford a VR headset, then you can just do it with your own intention. Mm-hmm. So that's one theory I have. Another theory I have is that this kind of all started to happen around the time of COVID, around the time of lockdown. So you have all these children, these kids being, you know, locked down and not being able to be out and about and having a normal life. So that might have been catalyst towards bringing about this trend of reality shifting.
Yeah.
And then third, children do have a different brainwave. I mean, most of the kids who are doing this, granted, are more like, you know, probably 11-year-olds to, you know, 20-somethings, you know?
Yeah.
But children, small children, are actually a lot more in a flow state than adults. And science proves this, that, you know, tiny babies up until the time you're going into school, so those really precious formative years, children are mostly operating in a theta brainwave. So they're literally walking around like in a form of hypnosis or dreamlike state. So theta is the brainwave we're all trying to get to as adults with our meditation, our dream work, with, you know, ayahuasca ceremonies. They're already there. So that's why from those very formative years, they just sponge in a lot of stuff. So if any trauma happens in those years, unfortunately, that's going to set you up for a whole lifetime of trying to go back to that theta brainwave to unpack all of that stuff that happened to you. But children are more receptive. That's why you always think of, why are little kids always talking to, like, themselves, talking to imaginary friends and singing to flowers, and they're like in a world of their own. Well, that's why. So it's probably easier for children to reality shift, especially if you might be a child who grew up still strongly connected to mm-hmm. that zone. And then as you become a teenager, you're still pretty much connected to that zone. So it's not very difficult for you to kind of just drop in,
yeah.
like we were saying, drop into the theta brainwave and reality shift. So isn't that fascinating that kids are doing this? And I'm thinking, wow, if enough children are doing this moving forward and start teaching this practice and start doing this, they're probably literally like going to be rewiring the genetic neuroplasticity, yeah. neurocode for humans born in the future. So perhaps, yeah. you know, in 1,000 years, you could look back at the TikTok reality shifters and go, look at these early hominoids that were like doing this reality shifting. They're the ones who helped us like yeah. be able to shift timelines. It's like
and
so
I wonder,
cool.
like where it came, like it's a trend, but like how, you know, I guess that's the power of the internet as well. And for us with our work and our practices and it becoming more mainstream, the internet's helping that happen. But it is like, yeah, it's incredible to see like how that is. Like, I wonder what whether spirit's coming through and planting those seeds, like, and how that's
it's
coming
so
through.
Cool.
Yeah.
I guess it's because it's like the Zoomers, like they're the Zoomer generation, the Generation Z or Z, as you would say mm-hmm. in the UK. They probably, you know, they have parents who are like millennials. They have like parents who are Generation X who are, you know, we're a lot more, you know, exploratory with yeah. these sort of things, you know. And it could be that, you know, it just could be, it could be passed down in some kind of way. And yeah. that's why they're doing this, but I find it exciting and so super cool. And it's why I did Conscious Dreamer, because I was really focusing on Generation Z and Generation Alpha,
okay.
like the baby, the kids coming up. And I mm-hmm. want like to just go, hey, get into your dreams. And like, I created this like activity book. Yeah. I mean, you're an adult, you can get into it as well.
Of
but
course.
My focus was on them because I can see this hunger for consciousness exploration in the kids. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So that's why I designed it as a little like kind of something that kids could get into.
Yeah. So would you like, so with Conscious Dreamer, would you say that that's like the progression of your first book Dreams, or is it, like, is it for a completely different type of kind of experience or person?
It's a real progression. Mm-hmm. It's a real progression. I break it down into 30 days and following your dreams 30 days with the start of an intention.
Mm-hmm.
So your intention is like, it could be, I want to use my dreams to create a body of artwork, for example. Mm-hmm. Say that's an example. It could be for healing or whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
So you state your intention at the beginning of the book. And then you start getting into the practice. So every single day from day one to 30, you're engaging in a conscious dreaming practice in order to bridge over your dreams. So you bridge mm-hmm. them over through like drawing. There's all these different activities. There's so many different activities. There's like over 130 activities in the
oh,
book.
Oh, wow.
and part of it is also documenting your activities mm-hmm. and putting them up on Instagram, on social media with a hashtag.
Right.
So then with looking at the hashtag, you can see all the other conscious dreamers all over the world who are doing the exact same thing.
Amazing.
And see if there's anything that like kind of synchronizes in the collective unconscious.
Yeah.
So creating an online conscious dreaming community. But wow. at the end of the 30 days, you have a body of work that you've bridged over from your dreams
mm-hmm.
and you get to showcase it and show it. So if you're an artist, it could be like, look at all of the series of paintings I did for my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a writer, it could have been like a short story. If yeah. you're a filmmaker, it could have been film. If it was for healing, you could say, I broke through my fear of dogs through my dreams, or I got over PTSD.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, by the end, you have a, ta-da, look what I've
yeah.
done. So that's the idea.
As soon as we finish recording, I'm going to audio book from She's Lost Control. I haven't really got much time at the moment, but I'm like, how am I going to fit this in? Because I've been paying more attention to my dreams over the last year or so, and like I was good at writing them down, and then I kind of haven't, but they've been becoming more and more vivid for me recently. And I did your crystals and dreams workshop, which is amazing. So I've been like sleeping with like lapis lazuli, which has been like really interesting. But I've noticed that like every dream that I do remember, there's always water in it. Whether it's the sea or whether it's a swimming pool or like I'm in the sea or I'm looking at it. And that the other day I had this dream that I was writing love letters to this sea monster.
So cute. I love it.
I was like, is this because some of the parts of the dream were related to things that I've seen in the day before.
Yeah. So dream incubation going on.
Yeah, like different things. But yes, I was like, and it was so vivid. Like this sea monster, he was like human by day and he drove this really flashy car, but he was like a sea monster at night. And he was like trying to ask me out, but writing me these like love notes. But I was like, but I've got a boyfriend and I don't want to cheat on him. And like, yeah, it was just all these handwritten notes, like going backwards and forwards to this sea monster.
That's really cool. I love that. I can see that as a really nice like comic, like cartoon.
Yeah.
So good.
It was, but yeah, I was like needed to like look up. I think when I've looked up what water means, it's like obviously our emotions and our feelings. It's interesting, like sometimes it's really choppy, sometimes it's calm, sometimes it's in a swimming pool.
Ah, nice.
It's a different kind of like what that means and like looking that up. But then I'm like, right, maybe not, like I'll do the conscious dreamer format to like explore it, because like I've been reading your book and I love it because there's so many like good tips. And I've been drinking a blend of mugwort, blue lotus and lime flower tea.
Ooh,
which
nice.
Makes my dreams like super vivid and like some journaling. But I'm like, oh, I love the idea of conscious dreamer to have a program.
Yeah, there's a program.
Yeah.
Exactly. For 30 days, the 30-day program. And it's like, and the plants are in there too.
Yeah.
So there's a few days with drinking mugwort in there as well. But your dreams with the water is amazing because when you have recurring symbols like that popping up, it's a really good chance to be able to use them for lucidity, to become lucid in the dream.
Okay.
And that's, one of the lucidity techniques in the book of Conscious Dreamer is working with your dream symbols to be able to trigger lucidity. But water is great because it's a deep symbol of spirituality, emotion, sensuality, receptivity, the collective unconscious, healing. There's a lot around water that's just amazing.
Yeah.
And you could look at your natal chart to see if there's like a lot of water that falls in your chart too.
Yeah, I have got a fair amount. I've got a bit of a mix, but I have got a fair amount of water. Yeah, I feel like I just could just, like I say, I get to this point with everyone, I'm like, I don't want to hang up. I don't want to like wrap up this call. Like I feel like I could like talk to you for like so long. But also you teach like workshops on lucid dreaming. So for people like, and this is what I want to sign up for like next. I'm going to like get off this call, buy your book, and see if you've got any workshops coming up. But you teach all of that anyway, don't you?
Yeah, so I do like a course in lucid dreaming, which is a 6-week course. It's with the Psychedelic Society UK. And it's nice because it's a group journey, and at the end of the 6 weeks there's a sleepover, which is online. I mean, and when we are in real life, we do it in real life, which is awesome. So we have an in real life weekend retreat, which is really nice. And through that 6 weeks, I teach all about the different plants and herbs you can work with for lucid dreaming, dream work, lucidity techniques, hypnagogic meditations, like lots of different tools. And it's nice in a group journey too, because everyone starts to appear in each other's dreams and it builds this this really nice little bond. It's great. It's really good. I love it. And I just love being in this little family for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So I have, and part of that too is like every single day I have a signal thread. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like you're in a class once a week. During the week, we're sharing dreams and signal, sharing resources. So it's like really tight knit. So nice. I make sure I'm like, yo guys, I'm with you for the whole 6 weeks. We're like, here we are.
I love it. And like, so when's your next one? Have you got a date yet?
Don't have any dates yet. I just finished running one, and I just finished running like a weekend retreat called Liminal Sensorium with Jade Shaw, who does astral projection. We do that as well. It's a combination of lucid dreaming and astral projection. And we roll that out every other month where it's like a weekend immersive where we show you and teach you the practices, and it's a sleepover too. So we just did that, and I just did the 6 weeks. So I'm going to have a little bit of a summer break, but I'm sure.
Yeah, you definitely deserve the break after releasing the book, all of these projects.
I'll just put it out there. I reckon probably back to school time. We'll get back to that. So September, I'll just call it out September.
Yeah. Amazing. And for the people that would love to learn more about you and work with you and come to your sessions, where can they find you?
So I'm on Instagram mostly. I am on TikTok as well. On those two apps. I'm on Facebook, but I don't really use Facebook anymore. It's just kind of like a default, but you can find me on any of those platforms. Also my website, which is luciddreamtree.com. And also my YouTube channel, which is Lucid Dream Tree. And I'm always putting up videos of conversations with consciousness explorers. I put up tips and lots of different stuff on that channel all the time.
Amazing. Oh, thank you. And one last question that I ask everybody is if you could go to another phase, and that could be in the past, in the future, whatever it is, if you go to another phase, what would your another phase be?
If I was to go into another phase?
Yeah. So you could, if it was another phase that you wanted to go back and enjoy, or give yourself a message, or another phase that's coming up that you're looking forward to, what's your another phase?
I'm a futurist, so I really like looking forward. I do enjoy reminiscing of my childhood and whatnot.
Yeah.
But looking forward. So I'm moving into the crone years because I'm turning 49. So I'm looking forward to being a wrinkly old lady. Yes. I'm so looking forward to it. And I'm currently I'm going through menopause right now, which I like to really talk about explicitly, even though people go, oh, too much information, Tree. But I feel it's really important. So it's like a power time, as a woman, and it's deeply taboo, and people think ew, gross, and ick when they hear that. But I just put it out there because I think to be empowered by it.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to this next phase, which is, becoming an old lady and an older witch. And I feel really happy about it and feel empowered by it. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think that's so important for people to hear, because I think so many people, it's just society and culture, isn't it, that makes us think that's not where, it's just hold on to your youth, hold on to that freshness, but actually we're not valuing the wisdom and the experience and how rich that actually is.
Totally. And it's the patriarchy.
Yeah.
It is. And it's many, many witches burned at the stake who were of menopausal years. In fact, a high, high percentage of them were women who were over the age of 40 plus. And that's very telling, that women of that age were seen as a threat and not wanted. And these were all the wise women who were, burned or murdered and killed. So that's a real hangover that I think we are culturally still going through. And we probably don't even know the deep connection it has to that time of the witch trials in Europe, but it is deeply connected to how we view women who are older years, menopausal years, having their hot flashes and whatnot, and how we view them as being bitches, undesirable, not needed anymore, but we are in fact needed.
Yes.
And our wisdom is, and our healing abilities are needed too, to help others.
Yes, 100%. Oh, thank you so much, Tree. It's been so amazing talking to you. I've loved recording this with you.
It's been amazing too. And you asked in the email too about my natal chart too.
Oh yes, because I was that. There's so many things. I was oh my gosh.
So the natal chart. So I'm a sun in Scorpio, moon in Scorpio. So I'm a double Scorpio with my rising in Libra. And in fact, even though I have that scary combination of the double Scorpio, I do have a lot of air in my chart.
What air planets have you got then?
Loads of Libra and an Aquarius.
Yeah, I see that. And I guess like one of the reasons why I always ask people about their astro profile is because I know that so many people that follow this are curious or really into astrology, and I think it's really helpful to understand like how that might show up in a different person.
Yeah,
and how that, how people are embodying it. I find that so fascinating. But you were talking about so many like other incredible things. I think when you were talking about like when you were younger and what you were interested in, I was like, oh yeah, like what's your kind of like astrological profile? But I guess the death doula thing makes so much sense as well for Scorpio.
Yeah, it totally does. And like all the occult stuff and all the witchy kind of things. Mm. It's like right on line with like Scorpio tendencies and energy, as well as sexual energy and empowerment through that as well.
Yeah.
I take very seriously as well. And then all the air stuff, which really makes sense with all the, you know, the thinking and the writing and the learning and the communicating.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. It's so incredible. Yeah. I'm Libra rising as well, but I'm Aries sun. I'm Aries sun, Aquarius moon.
Oh, great. Yeah, you got it. A good balance.
Yeah.
Yay.
I was like, love that you're like double Scorpio with everything that you do, because it's just like, yeah, of course.
Like, so cliche, man.
But like, but also I think as well, like Scorpios like get such a bad rap. I was speaking to someone before and she was saying like at their workplace, like one of her colleagues wouldn't tell people what her star sign was because she was Scorpio. And I just think like, I know Semra, who's been on this podcast, she's a Scorpio, my friend, Pip that was on series one, like she's a Scorpio, and I think it's just like Scorpios aren't bitches, like they're like, you know, like there's like these incredible deep like nurturing loyal healers that really kind of like I think see things from a different perspective that's just so needed.
Yeah, I know we have such a bad reputation. I always tell people when I go, I'm a double Scorpio, but I got a lot of Libra, because Libra is like the peacemaker. Everyone likes Libra. They're nice.
And especially with your rising. So when it's your rising, like that's what people see first, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they don't see your Scorpio first. They see your Libra, like, oh, so calming and like soothing and just like really diplomatic. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, because it's like so interesting to like know that about you. And I love, and I've already said this, but I love how that just really just shows up in the way that you're living your life and living your purpose. Like you're living your birth chart in that way, aren't you?
Yeah, so hilariously cliche, but
we love a cliche. We love a cliche.
Yeah, me too.
Especially when it's like that. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Another Phase. I hope that you have found these topics insightful and expansive, and that, you've enjoyed listening to this as much as I have done recording it. You can find me on Instagram at tamaradreesen_, as well as my website, which is wolfsister.com. And that is where you can book in with me for a tarot reading, find out about moon ceremonies, events, my books, as well as the podcast show notes and links. If these conversations have been resonating with you and you've got a spare few minutes, then I would really appreciate it if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and show some love for Another Phase by leaving a rating and a review to let people know what they can expect when they're listening to these conversations. If you haven't already, then make sure that you are subscribed to make sure that you don't miss out on any of the episodes that are coming up. They are released weekly. Thursdays is where it's at, so I will look forward to catching up with you then.